to the Missing Ingredient Podcast from Secret Sauce. I'm Brendan.
And I'm Zach.
And we'll be your hosts. In this series, we interview industry professionals, entrepreneurs, and recruiters to give job seekers the insider knowledge they need to break into tech. Thanks for joining us, and I hope you enjoy the show. In this episode, we interview Allison O'Brien. Allison is the head of accounts on the customer success team at Gigster. Gigster is an online platform that connects property hosts with renters looking to film in their home or space. I am really excited about how this episode turned out. We got the chance to chat about what it's like to work in customer success at such a young startup. Allison was the customer success team employee number one when there was only 5 people at the company. She was responsible for creating the entire roadmap and team processes, having never worked in customer success before, which is pretty amazing. So, without further delay, here's our conversation with Allison O'Brien. Allison, welcome to the show.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
No, thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you on. So, to begin, I'd like to get a little context about the company you work at, Gigster. So, could you briefly explain what Gigster is and provide a little context about the problem the company is solving? You know, what is the product? Who are your customers?
Yeah, definitely. So Gigster, I would say the easiest way to describe it is like the Airbnb for filming and event locations. So we're basically a marketplace style platform where anyone who owns a property can sign up on our site, list that property, and anyone who is in need of a location for filming, photo shoots, or any kind of event can easily log on, sign up, and search our site. So it's very similar to Airbnb, but for a bit of a different market. What we discovered is that currently there isn't anything like Gigster that really closes the gap between locations and we call them producers, which refers to both filming producers and event producers. In the past, like stereotypically, locations are oftentimes repped by agencies, which is kind of the old school way of doing it. They take double the commission that we do, and you don't always talk directly to the owner. You oftentimes are talking to an agent who's representative of the owner. And sometimes it can even be like an agent who represents an agent. So that's the way that the filming location, as well as the event location industry has been, you know, for years and years. So it's really our platform, we feel, caters towards 90% of the market that can't afford that premium charge, but, you know, they're still creative. They're still looking for a cool, unique location to film their project or host their event. And it just cuts out that middleman. It allows them to communicate directly to the locations, which we think is super cool. And it's, you know, it's just like a, as I said, Airbnb style platform. So it, we feel like it really is making locations more accessible, as well as allowing people who maybe own locations to have an extra stream of revenue that they didn't think of before.
Okay, that's really cool. Now, what do these filming spaces look like? Are these professional film sets, or are they just like event spaces where the owner wants to make some extra revenue?
Yeah, so it's actually both. So we have commercial locations that, you know, host their own events and things like that, or studios that already have filming. But the majority of our supply is actually residential locations. Because think about anytime you see a TV commercial, like even if it's at a house that looks like it's in the middle of America, chances are it was filmed in Los Angeles. And what Gigster allows is it allows producers to access, you know, quadruple or even more the amount of houses that they normally would be able to for cheaper pricing, and allow someone like, you know, someone who just owns a property in LA who has a normal job to have a production in their home, which can be a pretty cool experience.
Got it. So I could literally put my apartment on Gigster as a film location?
Yes. we have everything. So we have houses, we have, you know, abandoned warehouses, we have like random plots of desert land, we have bars, we have libraries, we have schools, cafeterias. So it can really be anything as long as you own the property.
That's really cool. Okay. And then on the other side, are these mostly like indie production companies, or who is, or is it just anyone who's looking to film anything?
We have a few different types of renters. So indie production companies are one. We also have a lot of students that film on our platform. We also have a lot of really established production companies, fashion brands, reality TV shows, larger network type TV shows, independent content creators, YouTube stars. I mean, really anyone. I mean, if you guys, for example, I know that sometimes you're in need of like a studio or something to film a video at, you could go on Gigster and find a studio, or even find someone's home that you wanted to film in if you were to do a commercial or something like that. So it's really anyone that needs a location.
Right. Okay, cool. And so you started there, what, like almost 2 years ago as a customer success manager? Is that right?
Yes, correct. So I started in August of 2017, right after I graduated UCSB, and they had officially launched in May of that year. I started as customer success manager. I was their first CSM. I essentially founded the department. And yeah, I mean, it was a really interesting experience because I remember actually the very first meeting I had with my company, the guy who hired me, who's actually our advisor now, he made me get up in front of our entire company, which at the time was only like five of us, but it was like our first meeting ever. And he made me get up and like write a roadmap for CS for that quarter on the whiteboard. It was like my second day of work. I remember being so scared. I was like, is this the moment that I get fired? Like, shortest.
This is the moment I find out I'm a fraud. Like,
ever. Yeah. And so that was kind of like, you can get from that story, like the kind of environment that I was thrown into right away. I ended up.
Yeah. I just want to back up a little bit. So, yeah. So you were hired, you had never worked in customer success before this role, right?
No.
Okay. And then you were hired as their first customer success manager and literally had to make the roadmap.
Correct. Sounds crazy. But what it really comes down to is just, I think they hired me because I had so many different positions in college where I was interacting with people. And I had an experience in tech before. So I think that's why they hired me. And the interview process was actually pretty similar to the process that I had when I interviewed at Graphic, which was a company I interned for that I know both of you worked for as well. They asked you a lot of questions where they gave you situations and you had to solve problems. So luckily I had experience in that kind of interview setting, which I think really helped me out when it came to this interview. But yeah, the roadmap thing was really scary.
I could imagine. So I want to get into some of the nuts and bolts of what a customer success manager does. So can you explain just a few examples of, you know, what the role is generally, like some of your responsibilities, and then also an example of how you worked, you know, with a customer through a problem recently?
So first of all, one thing that should be known with marketplaces and just customer success, but especially if you're a CSM in a marketplace, is that you have two very different kinds of users, right? You have the users that are on the demand side, which are the producers, the people looking for the locations. And then you have the users on the supply side, which are the hosts, people that are putting their locations up onto the website. So my job is, in a nutshell, to make sure that both types of users are able to successfully use our product, which sounds simple, but actually is a lot more difficult than you think with the marketplace. So, like, for example, hosts oftentimes are a little bit older, a little bit less well-versed with technology because they're homeowners, and, you know, they maybe have a little bit more money, but they didn't grow up using the internet. So a lot of my job with them is teaching them how to upload their location, how do you price your location to fit with the market rate? You know, what's the best way to describe your location? How do you use our chat feature on the site? What's the best way to respond to a potential renter? How do I send a custom rate to close a booking, et cetera, things like that. On the renter side, I do a lot of custom location work. So I have a lot of people that come to me directly asking for like a specific location. Like, I need, you know, a house that looks like it's in middle America, that's not in Hollywood because permitting is terrible there, but is under $500 a day and has like a red door, something like that. So I will use our technology and our platform to find them locations that match and send those over to them. And we have a lot of different like tracking systems that help us track at which stage our users are in the booking process, because eventually, like, our ultimate goal is, you know, everyone that comes onto our platform, we want them to book a location. Obviously that's impossible, but for me, like, I always just say, like, how can I optimize our conversion the most? Like, if I see people chatting and, you know, they're like, I don't know how to close this, I don't know how to send a custom rate, or like, it's too expensive, or I can't send an attachment, I oftentimes will just pick up the phone and like call them right then and there, and so that I can kind of push them through that process. But on top of that, I do the other side, which is our like kind of white glove service side, where I give pretty handheld customer service to our bigger clients. And in that, you know, with that, I would do like drafting contracts, negotiating rates, attending location scouts, basically everything start to finish in the booking process.
How do you have time in the day to do all of those things?
Delegation and automation. Those are my two favorite words.
Okay, so you're no longer a team of one.
No. Well, yeah, I have two interns that work below me, and they're amazing. I pretty much set them up to run CS for me. And I have meetings with them every week, and I have meetings every week with the rest of the team to go over pain points in our process. You know, like, an example is we were losing out on a lot of bookings because our pricing was reflected as a daily rate instead of an hourly rate. And we saw that a lot in chats when we were looking back. We're like, why aren't these bookings converting? You know, why am I having to call these people and explain to them that like, that's the daily rate? And, you know, just sitting down with your team and thinking of those little tiny things that are going to make your life easier. That's really how you, I don't have enough time in the day to do all of that, but things like that make it easier. And then, you know, just finding other solutions for automation using like an email, you know, automated email sequence to send out emails to people instead of manually doing it, or working with your tech team to find a solution for something else. What I really learned that I think is something important for anyone that's interested in tech is that you don't need to be a technical person to work in tech. You know, you can have no knowledge of technology at all, But as long as you're in there, like understanding the product, understanding the users and where the pain points are, you can figure out a way to solve that problem by talking to other people at your company who are knowledgeable in that field. So it's, I don't have enough time in the day, obviously, but automation and delegation are kind of how I get it done.
Yeah. So delegation and automation are two things that, you know, you point out as being a crucial part of succeeding in tech with someone who may not have a technical background. And I just want to get some insight into, like, how did you learn how to delegate and how to, you know, use these automation process, like these email sequences? Is it just learning on the job? Is there someone at your company who teaches new hires these skills? Kind of how did you learn how to do these things?
Yeah. So for me, I didn't have anyone to really teach me because I was the first person in this role. And because of that, I was the person that knew the role the best. The way that I basically discovered how to scale CS was by making mistakes. And one thing I really like that my manager always tells me is he, from the get-go, would tell me, ask forgiveness, not permission. And I think that a lot of early stage startups can relate to that because when you're working on a team with, you know, only five or so people, you don't have a ton of resources. And so it's really important to think, you know, what am I spending my time on? And if I'm spending my time on this one thing, like there needs to be a better way for me to go about this. So I'll give you an example of one of like the first, I guess, automation type things that I did in my role back when I started. Right now we offer a service that we call dispute resolution, which is anytime there's overtime or damages in a booking, we will help the renters and the hosts solve the issue. So when I started, we didn't even have like a portal where people could report damage and overtime. We literally just had on our website, like, call our number if there's damages or overtime, which at the time was fine because we only had like four bookings a month. But as you scale, you could see how that issue will quickly become something that takes up your entire day. So I, you know, this sounds super simple, but it's like all of these things are simple things that make your life 1,000 times easier. So what we did is we created what we call a type form. It's basically an online form that you can use to enter in entries into a Google Sheet. So we made a type form and sent it out in an email to all of our hosts on the last day of their bookings. And then they just started entering in all of their resolution stuff there. And so we were able to process like 10 times the amount that we typically would if they were just calling in. So that's one example. When I decided to hire interns, it was 6 months into my role as a CSM. And that was because we had decided to start doing sales, which I know this probably sounds really crazy to you, but we're an early stage startup. Up until that point, we hadn't been focused on that. We had been focused on making the platform work. Like, do we have a product that's viable? Once we figured that out, we're like, all right, we need to start making some money. And so I was shifted into a role that was more sales focused. And because of our limited resources, I had to find a way to keep CS running while also doing sales. So I hired two interns and I essentially just wrote them a guide about customer success, everything that I had learned in the past 6 months, trained them for a week and kind of just let them hit the ground running. And I really instilled in them the same thing, ask forgiveness, not permission, because personally, I think the best way to learn is by making mistakes. You know, it's the only way you can learn when you're in a startup where there are no rules and there are no guidelines for you.
Okay, so you automated with Typeform, which is awesome. We actually use Typeform as well at Secret Sauce. We use it to do a strengths finder assessment that we made to help students kind of figure out which roles might align with their strengths. And we love it. And then you delegated by hiring two interns and writing them up documentation, telling them to figure it out.
And if they fail,
it's okay. I love that. So, I mean, I know it's still, you know, a relatively small team, but, and, back then it was even more so. So you had to switch to a role that was more focused on sales. So what does the team look like now?
Yeah. So we have about 15 full-time employees now. We have a customer success department, which would be me, myself, and my two interns right now. And then we have a sales department that is myself, and then three other full-time agents, as well as one guy who's focused only on getting high-end locations. And then we have a one product guy, product manager, one marketing manager, our general manager who really does everything. And then we have about 7 to 10 developers that are currently located in Ukraine. So we outsource development, but they're an amazing team, luckily, and they work really well with us. And then other than that, we have our CEO, kind of oversees everything, but is less involved in the day-to-day operations. So that's pretty much the full team. Oh, we have one finance lady who is in Florida. She helps us with payouts. And then she also does our accounting. So that's pretty much the whole team. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Yeah, it sounds like it's starting to take shape more so than the five people that you had when you started.
Yeah, like 5 to 15 is actually a pretty big jump. And it really opened my eyes to how much I was doing before by myself. Like I essentially was doing the entire sales department job, our location head's job, and CS, obviously, we weren't scaled as much as we are now, so we didn't have as many users. But it's just nice now that it's starting to take shape because people are able to work on, you know, more specific projects, which is ultimately more effective for everybody.
Right. I'm curious, did you, like, when you had to transition and you were taking on some sales responsibilities, did you have the opportunity to go more in that direction and decided not to and stay with customer success, or how did that end up with you kind of back in CS?
Yes. So I did sales because it was kind of, we were at the point where we just needed to make money. And at that point we only had, like I said, the three or four of, or five of us full-time employees. And it was just natural for me because I already was, we have a full-time location partner. He has a ton of premium locations on our site. And what another part of my job is I help him manage a lot of his listings. So sales was pretty a natural transition for me because I was already doing it in a sense. It wasn't that hard for me to switch to using software to pull emails and sending out sequences or cold calling people to get leads. And once I set up the process, it was easy for other people to run with it. And I really like sales. I like it a lot, but I am a little bit more like I remember sitting down with my manager and him asking me where I felt like I should go next in the company. And you're right, I could have gone the full account executive route. But what I learned about myself is that I get really complacent if I keep doing the same thing over and over again. And so for me, having such a unique opportunity to work at a company like this, I feel like I need to be trying out as many different positions as I can at, you know, because I'm in such a unique position. I kind of treat it as like my business school, because I didn't go to business school. I just started this job straight out of college. But I also additionally, we hired 4 full-time agents from our competing agency in Hollywood. They're like the biggest location agency in Hollywood. And so they have years and years of experience doing that. And, you know, I was more of someone who just came in and like created the processes. And now that they're here, you know, I'd rather have them. They're the pros. They're the ones that like have all the connections in the industry. I'd rather have them handle that part. So that's kind of why I went back to CS. And I kind of started loving it. Like I have a love-hate relationship with CS, because every day you talk to people that are going to yell at you. You talk to people that are rude. You talk to people that will never understand your product, no matter how many times you explain it. But I oftentimes feel like CS gets kind of a bad rep. But people shouldn't think that way, because CS is really like, I say, like the backbone of the company. You're the front lines. You're the one that's talking to the customers every single day. You're the one that's getting all the feedback about your product. Like, your role is so valuable because you have your ear to the ground on your entire user base. And with customer, like, in my opinion, good products are built from customer feedback. Like, there's no point in, you know, coming up with a new feature or changing your product direction arbitrarily. But if 70% of your customers want something and you make a change to your product, then that's like really the direction that you want to be taking your product in. So for me, I chose to stay in CS because I feel like there's still so much more that we can do, especially as Gigster scales. And I just want to keep using this opportunity to learn and be challenged as much as possible.
And that's a point I really want to hammer home, what you're saying about CS being kind of this unglamorous role to a lot of people. And as Brendan and I source opportunities, especially internships and entry-level opportunities, there are probably more than any other position in tech for, you know, non-engineers, those mm-hmm. positions are customer success opportunities or customer service opportunities. And, you know, you made such several really, really great points about why customer success is a great place to start your career. You know, the point about being on the front line of gathering product feedback and, you know, being really the kind of voice and the advocate for your users. And we agree, like, good products are built on customer feedback. And it's just something that I want to echo, because we talk to a lot of kids who are like, you know, I want to work at a tech company. I want to work at a startup, but I don't want to do customer service, or I don't want to do customer success. And we ask them, you know, like, why not? And I hope that, you know, those listeners who may kind of be of that mind kind of take away the points that you're putting in front of them, because we believe it is really this dynamic place to start your career. And you're an awesome example of how much flexibility there is as well. All the different, you know, you've had your hands on sales, you've had your hands on, you know, agency work, and you've had your hands on so many different things that your company touches. And it really sounds like with a company small like yours, you can kind of move where you want to move. And if you don't want to be a customer success manager forever, that's okay. But it is a really great place where you can be highly leveraged. And I just want to endorse all those 100%. Points that you're making as well.
And you know what? If I had, when I first started my job and I was applying to other positions as well, there's no way I would have been hired as like an account manager off the bat with no sales experience, or a product management, you know, a product manager off the bat with no product experience. But if you have experience talking to people and being a problem solver, then you will have a good chance of getting hired as someone who is in a customer success role. And exactly like you said, there's so many places you can leap from. You can easily transition to sales. You can easily transition to marketing. You can easily transition to product. I think it's like a really good first job for anyone. And, you know, you have to pay your dues a little bit. And I still think that I'll be answering the phone at Gigster, you know, for the next several years. And that's something that's fine with me. I like talking to our users. I like feeling connected to them. You know, I like having a lot of responsibility, but also, you know, helping someone log into their account. Because in the end, you just have to, you have to treat every single user as if they were your last customer. It really reflects in your product and your company, and that word will spread. And I think it's really valuable personally.
I definitely agree. I love what you said about a startup being like your mm-hmm. business school. I think like that's the reason Zach and I are so bullish on people starting their careers at a startup. Like Gigster is a perfect example of that, where you have the flexibility out of necessity to try all these different things because the company needs that at the time. And as the company grows and scales, you'll have the opportunity to probably do something that you are not really even qualified 100%. For. But, and yeah. And from the outside, you would need years of experience to find yourself in that role. Maybe you transition into a product management role that, you know, a company like Facebook or Amazon would have never, you know, hired you for, given the experience that you had. But because it's a smaller company and there's that necessity, you get that opportunity. And like you said, you pay your dues and you get that experience. And then if what you want to do is go and work at a Facebook or an Amazon or a Google, you'll have that experience under your belt. And so I think it's a great foot in the door, like Zach was saying, as a customer success, because you really usually don't need prior experience for those types of roles.
Definitely. And working in a small company definitely has its pros and cons. But like you said, a big pro is that you're going to get a lot of responsibility, you know, probably more responsibility than you may be ready for. You're going to have to Google things to figure out how to do them. I mean, I honestly look things up on Google every single day. I was like the other day trying to send out like an email mailer, which I had to like use some Excel, like VLOOKUP, whatever. Literally Google, how do I, you know, do a VLOOKUP on Excel, or how do I do a pivot table on Excel? Google has all the answers. So you're going to be put into a lot of situations like that where you have no idea what to do, but you're going to learn so much because of that. And if you're ever put into a position where you actually do have resources and you do have things that are already laid out for you, it's going to be so much easier for you to execute at that job, and even focus on like a role that's more strategic or something like that. And I feel like now I'm ruined forever. I feel like I always am going to have to work for a small company, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, that's definitely something Zach and I can relate to.
Yeah. Sure.
So while we're kind of on the subject of product management, Zach had mentioned that that is an interest of yours, kind of transitioning into product management eventually. What prompted that?
Yeah, he's right. That is naturally where I would like to go next at Gigster, What really prompted it is all of my experience in customer success and working really closely with our product manager. I think my favorite thing about my job is our strategy sessions, because they're just, it's just so interesting to me. And I think I've always been this way, but it's so interesting to me that, you know, changing the way a page is laid out, or changing the font on a certain button, or changing, you know, a tiny feature in a product can so drastically affect conversion rate and therefore affect the number of bookings that we have and the amount of money that we make. And for me, now that I've been doing CS for almost a year, I have a laundry list of updates for a product that I know would make our product amazing. Obviously, it's not that simple. Because we're working at such a small company, you have to, I mean, what we always say is you have to fix the problem manually before you even think about getting tech resources to patch it. Because if you don't have that foundation built, the product or the technical change isn't going to do anything. So for me, I almost feel like the past year I've just been gathering all of these ideas and all of this data, which is truly the first step in any product management project. You have to gather data first in order to direct the team, in order to direct the team in a way, or direct the product in a way that's going to make sense for your users. So for me, product is something that's really interesting. I would love, my ultimate goal is to not have to have CS at Gigster, which sounds interesting. Like, my ultimate goal is to like basically automate myself away. But in order to scale, we are going to be having to do a lot of stuff like that. You know, I want our product to be so easy to use and so beautiful that we don't even have a phone number on our site, because no one has to call and ask questions about how to use it. So like, that's just kind of like an ultimate, you know, nerd goal of mine that I think about a lot. And
no, I love that.
It's obviously, we're never going to be able to not have CS, but I think that that's kind of a good mindset to be in when you're thinking like a product manager, right? Like, you want the product to speak for itself. You want it to be able to push any kind of person through seamlessly, with no friction points at all. So it's going to be a little bit difficult to get there, because first I have to automate CS to a point where I don't have to touch it very much, but that's a project I'm currently working on.
No, that's very wise what you said. And that was something like our CEO at Graphic would always say, is like, if you could automate yourself out of a job, then you should be promoted. And like, that is the ultimate goal. And also what you said about, you know, collecting data and building a manual solution to a product problem first before you devote engineering resources was very much, in my experience, it was very effective. It's like, And it gives you some experience kind of hacking something together yourself. Exactly. It's like, okay, I don't know how to do this perfectly, but I can hack together something that kind of works. And if people like it and it is actually working, then we'll come back to it and devote engineering resources and get this built correctly. But we need that evidence first.
Exactly. Yeah. You nailed it.
Brendan and I hacked together a lot of stuff together during our time at Graphic. But it is such a valuable part and such a fundamental component of being a product manager is just, well, it's going to take engineers 3 months to get this to even show up on their roadmap. So we have to do something now to make it work. And I think something about too, the immediacy of the fixes that you can implement in product management, like the urge you have to fix things so quickly is something that you learn a lot of in a CSM role, right? Like, this person is yelling at me on the phone, like, we need to fix this right now. And that's never a solution that's going to come from an engineer.
It's true. And even if someone is yelling at you on the phone, you can't fix it until you have 25 people yelling at you about the same issue.
Yeah, I remember when I was doing product management, I was inside the newsroom at the Associated Press in New York when Graphic expanded out there. And I used to have these weekly meetings with the engineering team, and they'd be like, you know, we want product feedback. We want product feedback. And I would just forward them these like scathing emails from the editors of the Associated Press talking about how difficult our product was to use. And that was the evidence that I didn't even have to go collect the data myself. It would come to me sometimes.
Yeah, I can really relate to that because I do the same thing. I just forward customer emails directly to my product manager. And like, thanks for doing my job.
Okay, so this has been awesome, Allison. We are going to wrap up in a few minutes. The last thing that I wanted to ask is if Gigster is currently hiring for any, you know, internship or entry-level roles.
Yeah, so one of my interns actually just had his last day. So I am hiring for a CS intern to start in January, preferably. This person would work directly with me in supporting CS. And it's a really fun and dynamic role. I think it's pretty unique to most internships because it's essentially the job that I was doing when I first started at Gigster. Of course, you're going to have guidance from me and a lot of resources. But Gigster is a really, really great supportive environment. If you're interested in tech, if you're interested in entertainment, please apply. I'm really looking for someone who's a problem solver, someone who's really comfortable talking to people, and someone that has maybe had at least one other internship at a tech company before. So if you're interested, please, please, please apply. I'm sure Brendan and Zach will put some kind of link in here somewhere to send their resume. You guys can forward
it to me. Put all of this in the show notes after.
Perfect.
Okay, great. Well, actually, there is one other thing that I wanted to ask. If there is any specific advice that you have for students who are interested in pursuing a career in customer success, or maybe just starting their career in customer success, what might that be?
Yeah, I would say don't take anything personally. And that's something that I learned the hard way, because you're going to be talking to people and they're not always going to be nice to you. And what you just have to remember is for every person that calls in and hates your product, most likely there are twice as many or three times as many people who love your product. And if you're interested in CS, I think, you know, like we said earlier in this interview, I'm a big proponent of starting out your tech career in CS. I think it's an amazing place to learn and grow. I would just keep your eyes and your ears open, ask questions. You know, like I said, make mistakes, learn from them, and, you know, read everything you can about tech, write everything down, all of that. I think it's pretty solid advice if you're trying to start your career. Two resources I really like. I mean, obviously Secret Sauce is an amazing resource for you guys. But I also love the podcast, How I Built This by Guy Raz. You can listen to people a little bit further along in their careers. And it's just really like inspiring to hear about that. So those are two resources that I always listen to as well.
Great. I appreciate the pity plug. Thank you for that.
Wasn't a pity plug.
Yeah, we are nothing compared to How I Built This. Guy Raz is the master. We also endorse that podcast. Brendan and I love it. And a lot of kind of how we structure the show is actually based around our constant consumption of that podcast.
That is true. Okay, well, Allison, thank you so much for your time. This has been an awesome conversation. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you guys so much. This was really fun.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. If you're looking to break into tech, visit our website at secretsauce.tech. And join our Job Seeker Network. Every week, we'll send you a new podcast with our interview notes highlighting our favorite insights from the episode. You also get access to exclusive job opportunities, an invitation to join our Slack community, and whatever else we feel like sharing. All right, see ya!